This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Thursday. We're going to talk about companies cleaning out the communist filth. Can it be done? If so, how can you do it? This is not actually going to be about Hollywood. It'll be more about the government. All that, emails, all kinds of other things coming up this hour. And in fact, I'm going to dog on some COVID people. That'll feel really good. All that and so much more coming up this hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. But I'm going to talk about this because, you know, I don't do a lot of pop culture stuff. It's just not my thing. I'm not into pop culture. I don't talk about celebrity this and celebrity that. Or if I talk about movies or something, it's because I watched one. It's just because I live my life. I don't do a lot of pop culture thing. But I am aware that there's a new Snow White movie out, and I am aware that it bombed, and I'm aware why it bombed. It bombed because Disney, let's discuss it. Why did it bomb? Everybody's blaming the young communist who starred as Snow White, but she didn't write it, didn't direct it, didn't produce it, didn't platform it. She's an actress. An actress, yes, who's an idiot communist who runs her mouth and now everyone hates her, but she's surely not solely responsible. You see, the movie, from what I understand, I'm not going to pay to go see it. Disney doesn't get my money. The movie is apparently all full of cultural Marxist filth, just from beginning to end. One of these female empowerment piles of crap. So it's awful. How? Why? Well, let's talk about it. Because a rumor is that now a bunch of Hollywood studios are, because of the disaster, the economic disaster that is Snow White, Hollywood studios are going to try to pivot away from making movies that are too, what do they call it, woke. You know, I don't like that word, but too woke. But can you do it? How do you do it? Well, how do you make a movie? What's it take to make a movie? Let's talk about this, because this will actually apply to the government. It's not about the movie. But just from what we know, the basics of what we know. Well, first, and really, most importantly, somebody has to write it. We all pay attention to the actors and actresses. Oh my gosh, he's my favorite. Ah, oh, look how pretty she is. But the writers are the one who come up with all these lines. Yeah, the actor, the actress can deliver it one way or the other, but good writers, good movie. Bad writers, bad movie. So someone has to write the movie. After someone writes the movie, you have to get a movie company to agree that they want to produce the movie. Then they have to find somebody to direct the movie. Then you have to find people to act in the movie. And during this whole process, there's all kinds of people involved. So my point is, who are the people who are going to be writing the movies, directing the movies, acting in the movies? Leaders, and this is really about our government, it's not about the movies. Leaders who take over bad organizations, if they aren't willing to clean out the bad organizations of people, then leaders oftentimes find themselves frustrated because they're unable to take the organization, whatever that organization may be, and send it in the direction they want it to go. Because they may have a vision and they may have the power as being the leader, the owner of the whole thing. But what they don't have is the willpower and or knowledge to get rid of the bad people inside of the organization. And until you do that, the organization will fail. It will be in a constant state a failure. That is a fact. If I have, I've used an example before because it was my favorite team, the New York Giants. One of their great coaches was Bill Parcells. But Bill Parcells left the Giants. And what did he keep doing? He kept going to really crappy teams and he'd make them a playoff team in a year. How? Bill Parcells told you. Oh, a third, at least. The bottom third of every team I take over, I try to make sure I fire all of them the first year. Bill Parcells would fire the security guards. He would go overboard because personnel is policy. That's not just a cliche saying that you've heard a million times. I can take over the FBI and I can be the sharpest, most patriotic human being in the world. And I can have great ideas about what the FBI should be doing. And I can have great ideas about what the FBI should not be doing. You shouldn't do this and shouldn't do that and shouldn't do this. But it's an organization with 35,000 employees. If I have an organization full of those same employees, whatever my ideas are, whatever my directives are, it doesn't matter if the same employees remain exactly where they are. And this is what makes people uncomfortable. This is how people get uncomfortable, because what it involves is pain. What we oftentimes want is we want a leader. We just want a new leader to take over. We don't want to dump the organization or have all these people be fired or lose their jobs. We want a new leader to take over and just provide a better leadership, different leadership. We just need him to lead in a better way. But it doesn't work that way. I joke about Corey and Chris, I'll make about the show. I joke, but they're invaluable. Because we, not only because they work hard, we align on things. They want the show to be good. And so when I show up, I don't have to worry about one of them being late. They're never late. I don't have to worry about somebody screwing something up. If I ask for an audio clip of something, they've oftentimes already found it ahead of time. I don't have to tell them to coordinate things to make sure the show goes out on the air. I don't have to yell and scream to make sure the show gets uploaded to the podcast. I don't have to do any of these basic things because I have already put the personnel in place. And so once the personnel is in place, the direction goes fine. But if I had a couple turds, and we have had a turd or two flow through here before, if I had any turds here, then what would happen is the show would suffer. It didn't matter how well I tried to lead or yelled or screamed or whatever I did. Bad personnel will end badly for whatever organization it is. Hollywood can say all day long how much they want to change the direction. We don't want to make these commie films anymore. Okay, who's going to be writing the new ones? Who's going to direct them? When it comes time to find an actor, do you have a long list of actors who are on the right that you can choose from out there? You have one of those? You remember Jeff Bezos went through this recently. It was amazing. It was one of the more amazing things I've seen. I wasn't even surprised, but it was still just jaw-dropping to watch it happen in real time. Bezos, one of the richest guys in the world, he's the guy who owns Amazon, right? He buys the Washington Post. Washington Post is just the most wretched far-left rag and always has been. Trump gets elected. Bezos, look, there are all kinds of rumors about Bezos's true political leanings. Did he pretend to be a lefty because of this? But none of that matters. None of that matters for the purpose of our conversation. After Trump got elected, Bezos was looking on in horror at the things that were coming out every single day in the Washington Post, and he's watching their subscribers go down. They're losing money. Newspapers are losing money across the country. It's hard to keep the doors open in a newspaper. And so Bezos, maybe just for purely business reasons, Bezos puts out a public letter and says, hey, this newspaper, we believe in freedom here. We believe in free enterprise, and from now on, our opinion section is gonna reflect American values and freedom. What did you see? Did you see Washington Post employee after Washington Post employee said, well, I mean, I guess we have to. He is the boss. I'm just going to do what I'm told. That's not how it works. That's not how communists work. Employee after employee after employee went public and said, oh, I don't know what this is, but I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. The Washington Post hasn't adjusted its content even the tiniest amount. Because you can issue all the orders you want, and I'm the owner, and you have to do this until you're willing to change the names, the faces of the people who work for you. The direction of your organization will not change. You ever talk to one of these or seen an interview maybe with a career criminal? Maybe grew up terrible, surrounded by crime. All the influences in his life were criminal, maybe even his mother, criminal. Ends up going to prison like they all do. Does a bunch of time, gets out of prison, ends up getting busted again. Happens all the time. You always see that. Gets busted again in a year. He's robbing a bank or something. And you see these guys get interviewed. I remember one time, I think it was on a podcast, I was listening to it, and the guy was saying, well, you can tell me not to go back to a life of crime, and I get that. I know that I did wrong, but where did I go when I got out of prison? To the only home I ever knew. I went back home. And what were all the bad influences in my life doing when I got out of prison? They were all doing the same criminal things they were doing when I left for prison. It's the only life I've ever known. If he doesn't change that environment, the people around him, then he won't change. If you don't get rid of the communists inside of your government, your company, you can't change the direction of it. That's why I love companies like Pure Talk. They didn't come around to being pro-America, pro-freedom yesterday when it got popular, when Trump got elected. That's not how it works with Pure Talk. Pure Talk was pro-America for a long time, forever. Their CEO fought for this country. Who volunteers to go to a second tour in Vietnam with Mac V. Sogg? The CEO of Pure Talk, that's who. Why would anybody hire Americans in customer service? Nobody does that now. Isn't that too expensive? Pure Talk doesn't care. American workers, American jobs, you pay less for your cell phone. Right now when you switch, you save an additional 15% off your first month. PureTalk.com, dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show. On air and online at jessekellyshow.com.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Thursday. And yes, along those lines, I don't want to act like nothing beneficial is happening when it comes to cleaning out personnel. Here's one. Almost 50% of national jobs cut are D.C. government workers. The Trump administration is doing well. Is it enough? No, it's not enough. There's a ton of work still to do. They are doing well, cleaning out the gunk, cleaning out the filth. It's going to take time. They are doing well. So let's celebrate that. Also, let's do some more emails. Jesse, I appreciate your comments about the peacetime military. I was in the Marine Corps Reserve from 80 to 86. My unit was not mobilized for Desert Storm. Even in the reserves, there are times during training that can be very risky. Let's just say you become more aware of your own mortality. There will be no parades, no monuments, no medals of honor, and no movies made about the peacetime military. Yeah, that's why I try as best I can. I know we're not perfect, obviously. There's no way to perfectly honor the dead, and you don't catch everything. I try as best I can to honor the people who died during training. One of the last times I talked about this, somebody emailed in and a relative of theirs, I believe it was a relative, maybe an uncle, grandfather, had died in World War II. How did they die? Well, think about the air operations in World War II, how incredible those things were. And have you ever thought, just logistically, let's just walk through this, and I'm far away from being an expert, okay? I'm the layman here. But think about an aircraft carrier. Okay, there's an aircraft carrier. But those usually aren't alone. Let's say there's two of them. Okay, they're about to fly a mission. It's 100 miles away. They're going to go bomb something 100 miles away. Have you ever walked through in your mind the logistics of that? Okay, so only one plane can take off at a time. So you want them to fly in formation, right? So the planes are going to fly up, and then they have to pick a spot, and they have to kind of circle around until all the planes, the different planes from different areas, are all up, and then they're all flying around, and they're all flying in formation. And by the way, if somebody makes one little mistake in formation, everybody dies on it. And this is before you fly the mission. And then when you fly back, you have to find the aircraft carrier, land the plane successfully on the aircraft carrier without killing yourself or other people on it. Now, if you weren't even in combat, doing that is dangerous. It's dangerous. Anyway, somebody had emailed in. During flight operations, their relative had flown a plane into the side of a mountain in the Pacific. Oh, how could you do that? It was so foggy so much. Fog sets in. You can't see. These things happen. People deserve to be honored. Hey, Jesse, about arming the world during World War II, I read once that someone said the Germans were amazed they could destroy 100 tanks in battle, and the next day there would be 1,000 more. Unless we start manufacturing again, we won't be able to do that now. Well, for all the talk of tariffs, hate them, love them, I'm concerned about this, I love it, whatever people have to say about it, whatever your thoughts on it is undeniable. You must have the capacity to make things inside the borders of your country. Otherwise, if a war breaks out, you are entirely at the mercy of others. You're at the mercy of your supply lines. Think about it. If you can't make those tanks, if you can't make those planes, those artillery rounds, if you can't make them, that means you have to import them, which means that's a supply line that you must protect. And if you don't protect it, the enemy will sever it and you are done. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that we get tanks from China. Well, what if we go to war with China? Okay, China cuts us off. Okay, we'll go somewhere else. All right. Where? Let's say we found a place. What if we were going to get it from Spain? Let's go get it from Spain. Well, China's putting how many attack submarines in the water? Where do you think China's going to send those attack submarines to patrol if we start getting critical raw materials from Spain during a war with China? They're simply going to send all those ships to the bottom of the ocean. It is a national security issue. And yes, that was what was so amazing. We really saw it come to the forefront during World War II. Remember, what it revealed was the power, the incredible power of our economy, of our manufacturing sector. The war just revealed that it was there, that we could take that manufacturing sector and we could turn it into a war machine, which we did. Because we took factories that were already there and we just retrofitted them to make planes and tanks. We armed the entire planet. And you're right, the enemy, the Axis powers, Germany, Japan, they were just floored how we never ran out of stuff. And remember, everything gets broken during war. Your weapons will break, your tanks, your planes, your ships, everything will break. If it's not during combat, it'll break otherwise. It will break. You will replace it. It's not about just how much you have. It's about how much you can replace. Well, what if we lose half of our Navy in a war with China? We don't build ships anymore. Guess what? War over, at least as far as offensive operations go. You're not going to be able to project power over there. You might be able to defend your shores, but you dang sure can't project power over there. All right, I have to go off on something COVID-wise for a second. We're going to talk about trust. Hang on.
Get the cure for rhinos. Weekdays with the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Thursday. Remember, tomorrow's an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, and you need to get your questions emailed in right now to jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Now, Scott Gottlieb, we just can't seem to get rid of this annoying leech. He was one of the prominent medical voices during COVID. Maybe you remember, he was the guy out there saying things like this.
This does look like it's going to be a flu-like paradigm where there's going to be new variants that emerge each year. Hopefully we'll guess right in terms of how we formulate the vaccines, but you're going to need updated protection like you do from flu to try to match the vaccine against the variants that's circulating. But if you want to update that protection and also get more protection against the possibility of infection, you will need to keep up to date with your vaccine.
Yeah, so all that was a lie. He didn't have any studies that showed that. He guessed. That was a lie. And don't try to sell me. Well, no, you don't understand the medical. No, no, no. They didn't know. Nobody, not one person, I don't care their title, I don't care their qualifications, not one human being knew anything about the efficacy. Hey, Chris, how about that word? About the efficacy of that vaccine when they were telling you you had to take it. Not one person, because the studies weren't there. That I do know. The studies were not there. And yet they all ran out and they told you, you have to take it, you have to take it. Oh my gosh, it'll stop the spread. It'll slow the spread. Wait a minute, it won't do any of those things. Whatever, get an update. Up, you need another update. Up, well, hopefully we guess right this time. And now, these very same people, this was Scott Gottlieb, I think this was yesterday.
But I do worry that a lot of the anti-vax sentiment, or a lot of this kind of movement is really an anti-vax movement, and some of the MAHA stuff for some people is just the wrapping around what is really a much more deliberate anti-vax campaign. And the evidence of that to me is when you have people like the person who name-checked me this morning who goes out and talks about some of these things around food and that are more kind of like MAHA related, however you define that, he gets attacked by the anti-vaxxers that he's not being anti-vax enough. So I think, like, you know, the fellow travelers are taking heat from the anti-vaxxers because they're adhering to the MAHA.
Anti-vaxxer this and anti-vaxxer that. Do you think, let me ask you, because I wonder this, I really do. I try to be self-aware. Self-awareness is a difficult thing for all of us, isn't it? Because it involves accountability. But I try to be aware of who I am and who I'm not. What I do well, what I do wrong. What I've screwed up in the past. I try to be aware of that. Do you think Scott Gottlieb, do you think he ever looks in the mirror and says, wow, all these people now, they question vaccines. They question all this medical research. Maybe I had something to do with that. Do you think any of them do? I ask because I warned all these people, all of them. I warned loudly. I know word got back to all of them. I warned them all during COVID that you're burning the last credibility you have. And once you burn it, once you've taken your institution and you've destroyed its credibility, the people who used to trust your institution, they will remove that trust from your institution, but it actually gets even worse for you. They will carry it somewhere else. It's not as if they will take that trust away and just hold on to it. When it comes to knowledge of things we don't know, we will always seek out that information. I'm not a huge car guy at all. I'm really, really good at changing tires. I don't want to brag. I can change the oil. I can do like basic things like that. But beyond that, no, I don't even... I can't work on your carburetor, okay? I don't know. I'm not a car guy. I'm not like Chris. Chris can rebuild engines and stuff. I don't do that. So if my mechanic, who I go to when something goes wrong in my car, if he screws me over and screws me over and screws me over, well, I will take away my trust from him. But I'm still not a car guy. I have to take it somewhere. So from there, after I withdraw it from him, I will go seeking an opinion I can trust, and he's not going to have any say whatsoever where I land. And so for all of you, because I see so many of you doctors, nurses, scientists, hospital administrators, so many of you were so wrong and frankly pretty freaking evil during COVID. You were wrong. You were loudly wrong. You insisted repeatedly that you were right, that everyone else was evil and bad and wanted to kill grandma. You did this, and now trust has been taken away from you. And now you look around lost, and I can't stand it. They're always looking around lost. Well, how did that happen? Here's how it happened.
This does look like it's going to be a flu-like paradigm where there's going to be new variants that emerge each year. Hopefully, we'll guess right in terms of how we formulate the vaccines, but you're going to need updated protection like you do from flu to try to match the vaccine against the variants that's circulating. But if you want to update that protection and also get more protection against the possibility of infection, you will need to keep up to date with your vaccine.
Yeah, he made all that up. And now he's on stage ranting about these anti-vaxxers.
But I do worry that a lot of the anti-vax sentiment, or a lot of this kind of movement, is really an anti-vax movement and some of the MAHA stuff.
Scott Gottlieb is as responsible for the anti-vax movement as RFK Jr. is. The difference is Scott Gottlieb doesn't seem to know it. And this is, by the way, this is also why I've gotten so passionate about chalk. About natural herbal supplements. I've always despised drugs, unlike Chris. I've always despised drugs. Seriously, medicine, pharmaceuticals, I just hate it. I hate them. I understand they're necessary sometimes. I totally get it. I'm not dogging on that medication that keeps you alive. I just, in general, I try to avoid them. And as I watched what happened to our medical institutions in this country, I got more and more horrified. I'm less trustful now than I was before, and I was already pretty friggin' distrustful. So then chalk comes along. Natural herbal supplements, but it's more than that. Seton, who runs chalk, is passionate about his health, passionate about natural solutions to things, not grabbing the newest pharmaceutical bottle. These things, he doesn't just come up with these things willy-nilly. He believes in it all the way. All the way. Last time I was with him, we were in some business meeting. It was really boring, and me and Seton were kind of ignoring the suits. And Seton pulls out some kind of special oil, and he starts like dabbing it on his tongue. And I'm all, Seton, what are you doing? He's all, well, this is for, I mean, he just knows everything about this stuff. That's why you love the male vitality stack so much. That's why you love the female vitality stack. Go try it. Chalk.com, promo code Jesse. Trust me, try it. Give it a month or two, all right? Millennial Marine, you have this right. Thank you. Great segment. He's talking about tariffs. We are not allowed to lumber our forests out west due to spotted owls, so no logging, and then they go up in flames. And even then, we can't log the remainder. Trump can screw around with tariffs all he wants, but if he does not gut the regulations, nothing is coming back. Well, it's not, I mean, look, that's true. America became hostile to these industries. And what we want is these industries back, right? That's what you want. That's what I want. What we may disagree on is how to get them back. So I'm not even talking about tariffs, yes, for, against, but the truth is America is a hostile environment for manufacturers. That is a fact. If you want to have a rubber plant here, an oil refinery, a steel plant, if you want real bone manufacturing, I'm talking the bones of the economy, America is a hostile place to do business. We have for decades allowed these psychopathic degrowth greenie commies to run everything, where every animal is endangered, everything is this has to be regulated, we need a new law here, we need a new law there. Well, soon you've put 1,000 hoops I have to jump through in front of me just to get my plant going here. China not only didn't put the hoops in front of me, they're paying me to come over there. If America does not become more hospitable to manufacturers, all the tariffs in the world will not matter. And the guy's right about simply logging the forests. We have endless trees, and loggers, they log responsibly. You'll log this section and then that section, and then eventually one regrows. I don't know if you've heard, but trees actually regrow when you cut them down, I swear. But instead, it's yet another industry we've destroyed in this country. Oh, why do we have to import lumber? Because you let these filthy Democrats run critical parts of our economy, and they destroyed it like they do everything else. All right. Talk about girl bosses real quick. Then I have a theory on something. Hang on.
Fighting for your freedom every day.
USA! USA!
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a spectacular Thursday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. So I've got a theory, a weird theory about something, and I just have to get it off my chest. And I need to, before I get into my theory, I need to explain something that I've become aware of as I've gotten older. And honestly, as I got more into media, as 6.5 years ago, we started this and I've started to learn things about the media. I've started to become more aware of PR campaigns, public relation campaigns. Have you ever looked up the public relations industry? It's kind of a weird industry, isn't it? Especially for a normal person, because these public relations firms, they're not small mom and pop shops oftentimes. They have skyscrapers in Manhattan. They have fancy office buildings right on the beach in LA. How in the world is there that much money? Who hires these people? Lots of people do. Lots of wealthy entities hire public relations firms. And one of the real genius parts of it is most people, they can't name anything the firm does. If I was to take the biggest public relations firm in the country and I was to hold them up in front of you and I was to ask you, name me one public relations campaign they've done without looking it up, you wouldn't have an answer. And I wouldn't either. I'm not saying I do. I would. Well, I could tell you all of it. I wouldn't either. So why is that? All this money, all these campaigns, and we don't know anything? Because part of the art of doing public relations is you don't want people to know you're doing public relations. Because that sounds kind of dirty, doesn't it? It sounds kind of skeevy. Remember Justin Timberlake? Justin Timberlake, that singer? He got busted for a DUI a while back, did something stupid. And it wasn't long after that, I think it was the New York Post. We woke up one day and there was this long article blasting away at the cop who pulled him over, exposing things about the cop's background. And that's a public relations campaign. That's what that is. Somebody, I'm guessing, I don't know this, I'm guessing somebody in Timberlake's camp said, hey, smear the cop. It's a public relations campaign. So I have a theory about something, and I don't know this, but you know who Bill Burr is? Comedian, used to be very funny, not for the kids at all, but vulgar, kind of a he's a Boston guy. Boston guys are generally funnier anyway, just kind of angry, the rant, not you, Corey, other Boston guys, you're not funny. Anyway, kind of ranty, angry, just he had a great bit. Has a great bit, right? Bill Burr, it's a very, really famous comedian. And this was a few weeks ago. You probably remember it. We woke up one day and Bill Burr seemed to be on every single media show. It wasn't like a one-off where he was doing a quick podcast. It was show after show after show with this
stuff.
And
then like a few years later, this guy Siegtiled twice.
Two of them.
Once in the front.
He's talking about Elon Musk.
If you missed it in the back, and it's just like, he still has a job. That guy still has a job. I don't understand those guys.
Is that idiot Elon Musk?
Oh.
That guy, like he's going to leave.
Just remember, by the way, the whole Sieg Hailed thing, that was already confirmed. It was on video. That's not at all what he did. And Bill Burr would have known that. Yet, who else was saying that same lie? Everyone in the media. All the American Democrats. Huh. Same lie.
Evidently is a Nazi. Like, I just refuse to believe that it was an accidental two-time Sieg Heil. And he does it at a presidential inauguration. This is why I hate liberals. It's like liberals have no teeth whatsoever. They just go, oh, my God. Can you believe I'm getting out of the country? I'm just like, well, you're going to leave the country because of one guy with dyed hair plugs and a laminated face. Okay.
He went off on Elon Musk, but this wasn't just one show. That was him on The Breakfast Club. He was all over television, this comedian out of nowhere. rolling out all these left-wing talking points. And Jewish producer Chris pointed out when I was playing that, historically, he's been kind of down the middle. He's just a comedian. He'll dog on the left, he'll dog on the right, but he sounded like some kind of kooky left-wing activist. Then, yesterday, this video comes out. Some reporter went up to Bill Burr and asked him on the red carpet. He was on the red carpet. Asked him about the comments that Bill Burr had made, not on one show, on several shows. And Bill Burr got testy about it.
Your reaction to Luigi Mangione? I was reading up, you know, that perhaps you've been supportive of what he did. What is your take on that?
If you were reading up, I don't think you read up on it. Because I said what I felt about it, and I said what a lot of
people
said.
Some people took it that way. So could you clarify what you think?
No, I'm not going to just have some controversial moments so you can get clicks. I'm not doing that. I mean, I'm here for Conan. I'm not doing all of this. What are you going to bring up next? The Middle East? I went to summer school 3 out of 4 years in high school. I'm not qualified to talk about this.
What do you think about global warming?
Hey, I'm not qualified, man. Whoa, I'm just a comedian. I'm just here for Conan. What are you... Now, 5 minutes ago, you were a political activist on multiple television shows, spouting every single left-wing talking point. The reporter, a week later, asks you about the comments you made, and now, hey, man, I went to summer school. Don't ask me. I'm not involved. I have a theory. I have no idea why I just talked about this for an entire segment, but I think he got paid. Think for a moment how many billions of dollars are floating around out there in left-wing circles from all these billionaires writing checks for this protest, this activist, this or that, this or that. I think people, famous people, actors, comedians, musicians, I think they get paid a lot for their left-wing points. What's it matter to George Soros if you walk up to somebody, hey man, we'll line up the interviews. Here's $10 million. Here's some talking points. Sound good? If you don't have anything moral against it, why not? Just a theory. I see PR campaigns everywhere now that I've become aware of the PR industry. Just a theory. I think he got paid for it. And then caught a bunch of heat from you, and now he's going back to the, hey man, just a comedian. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't want a politic here. It's weird. It was a different guy on television last week. I wonder why. All right, well, I touched on crime earlier in the show, and it was really awful. It was really heavy. So allow me to present you a solution. You need to, at all times, be ready to encounter one of the animals we have in our society, and we have many of them. And that's a sad fact. We do. We have a lot of people who are inherently violent. They don't know how to act. And you might run into one in the grocery store tonight. You might run into one at school. You might, God forbid, have one kick in your door. You know, somebody just kicked in a guy's door and he pulled out his Byrna pistol launcher and he's still alive to this day. Byrna pistol launchers, they're non-lethal, but they have powerful deterrents like tear gas, pepper balls. It'll incapacitate an attacker and save your life. You want to deal on one? BYRNA. Byrna.com/Jesse. That's Byrna.com/Jesse. Another hour. We'll be back.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.